Every single day I feel
the Artlist IO.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never knew I'm blessed, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Hey, 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 welcome back to That One Studio. It's your boy C-Rock on the What Are You Made Of show. Again, we have another great guest to share what they're made of, the ingredients that have gone into making them who they are. And this is probably one of the first, I can't remember anybody else, that has been on as many podcasts or more than I have. And I'm excited to talk about that today too. John, by the way, John, I forgot to ask you how to pronounce your last name. I apologize. How do you pronounce your last name?
That's all right. I've got a little device for it. It's Jantz like pants, but it's spelled really weird. So I give Jantz. People a lot of grace.
Well, you see on this, we're on riverside.fm, by the way, folks. So this is how I record the podcast. And below mine, do you see mine right here?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's on your side.
So my last name's
Scirocco.
Yeah.
Big Italian name. People always ask me, how do you pronounce that? They're mispronouncing it. So I just say, you know what? The heck with it. I branded C-Rock.
I wish I had a
John
cool
Jantz.
Nickname.
We're going to create one for you today.
All right. My high school buddies all called me
John
JJ.
Jantz in the building. That's what I was thinking. I'm going to have to come up with something different because I was thinking that at first. But, you know, Italians, by the way, John, Italians, you know, we all grow up nicknaming each other and the person doesn't get to pick their nickname.
Right.
It doesn't matter if they're okay with it or not.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, my daughter, she's a little tiny thing. So we play softball and I coach softball and she's 11 now and we call her Tiny. Back in the day. Well, now she doesn't want to be called that anymore. And I'm like, hey, tough cookies, you know? So anyway, let me fill them in on who you are, man. John Jantz is a marketing consultant, speaker, and author of Duct Tape Marketing, The Referral Engine, The Self-Reliant Entrepreneur, and The Ultimate Marketing Engine. He's also the founder of the Duct Tape Marketing Consulting Network, which trains and licenses independent consultants and agencies to use the duct tape methodology. So John, you do a lot of stuff here and I love every part of it because I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of startups, and one of the main things that they have problems with is marketing and sales.
Yeah, always. No question, always.
Yeah, so all the stuff that you're pouring into the market is phenomenal, helping people. It changes lives. A lot of times we see people doing these programs and this and that, and people are like, oh, they're just doing it to make some money. It's not. No, this is impact stuff that can change people's financial condition and help for generations. Yeah, I think there might be a delay. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine. There is a little delay.
Okay, yeah. All right. Well, I apologize for that. We'll work through it. So let me ask you the famous question that's written on the wall behind me, John. What are you made of?
You know, in hindsight, that's a really easy one to answer. I would say curiosity, resilience, and a really deep desire to help small business, mid-sized business entrepreneurs really thrive in their businesses.
So what does that stem from for you, like in the history of your business career? Obviously, it seems like there's a catalytic moment in our lives that caused our mission. What was it for you? And even if it was before business and maybe when you were a kid.
Yeah. No, actually, I the one moment that I point to about my desire, my commitment to working with small business particularly was, you know, when I first started my business, I took any work I could hustle, you know, big companies, little companies, you know, didn't really matter to me. I had a company that I won't name them, a really large corporation that I did about, I don't know, it was like a $5,000 project for or something kind of small. They sent me a check for $500,000. And you know, I got that thing and I was like, whoa, I better tell somebody about this. So I called them up and they proceeded to send me all this paperwork and all this hassle that I had to go through to give them the money back. You know, if it had one more zero on it, I probably wouldn't even call them, but it was really a moment for me where I was like, I want to work with those people that they're actually writing the check. You know, it's like they're deciding to get braces for their kids or pay me, you know, in some cases. And I think that's really what that moment really kind of drove it home.
Yeah, I think I would have ended up in we always do the right thing, but I was just thinking of places that I would go if I had $5 million wired to me. so that's amazing. Now, duct tape marketing, you know, it's something for me I feel like when I never heard of that term before until I ran into you. By the way, I think I've seen you on Instagram somewhere, maybe Instagram or you. I don't know where I saw you before my partner Todd reached out to you and your team. But I feel like when I saw that, I'm like, holy cow, that's what I do. I feel like I'm always trying to figure it out. And then the duct tape marketing, I don't know the concept. We're going to find this out. But what I found out, though, is the more I just figure it out as I go, and when we're finished, 6 months, a year later, it's like this big masterpiece.
Yeah, to me, the name actually came about kind of a fluke, quite frankly. It wasn't like years of research or anything. But I started my business, as I mentioned, you know, just hustling work. Decided I was going to go all in on working with small businesses, but they were pretty frustrating. You know, no budget, no attention span. And so I thought, well, I've got to create a process where I can walk in and say, look, here's what I'm going to do. Here's what you're going to do. Here are the results we hope to get. And here's what it costs. Do you want it or not? And, you know, surprisingly, what I've discovered was in trying to solve my frustration, I actually tapped into what is still today, increasingly, one of the greatest frustrations with small business. And that is, it's so hard to buy marketing services. So essentially, I was trying to turn marketing almost into a productized approach. So I felt like I needed to give it a brand name. And duct tape marketing just felt like the proper metaphor for what it's like, as you mentioned, to kind of build and grow a business. It resonated with the folks I was trying to attract, and kind of the rest is history. I named it my first book. It's the name of my podcast. I actually changed the name of my business to Duct Tape Marketing, and the brand has served me. The name has served me quite well.
Yeah, I'd say. I mean, I'm a branding expert, and when I saw, like, when I see something right away, I'm like, that's good. Right away, I can tell. And by the way, it's not just about having a name that's good, but you got to be able to execute beyond that and promote, get people to know it, right? But before we get into your story, because I want to dive into your upbringing and all that and what's made you today. Sure. But I gotta ask your thoughts on marketing services. Okay, there's different ways you can offer your product or your service, right? And there's ways where you can charge a retainer, you can charge for a project. Yeah. But what are your thoughts on charging for results?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So our current model is, you know, somebody hires, we actually train and license our model to, you know, hundreds of agencies around the world. And essentially our model is somebody contacts, you know, they may say, I need a website or I need SEO. And it's like, yes, you do. But first you need a marketing strategy. And so our first and only kind of engagement is to do something we call strategy first. 100% of the time that turns into a long-term retainer. And so our pricing model, if you will, is much more of a, okay, what's a number that you're going to feel comfortable paying me for the rest of your life? That's kind of how we base, you know, what we do on our retainer. And then we scope out, you know, the work that we're going to do. The idea of pay for results, I think is a brilliant one. It's a great one. It's very hard to pull off because, unfortunately, in the marketing world, working with small, mid-sized businesses, there's a lot that's not in your control. You know, we often have businesses that will come to us. We'll help them generate leads. We'll make the phone ring off the hook. And, you know, those customers are walking out the back door, you know, as fast as they come in the front door. And to some degree, you know, the sales process and the service process and the experience that people have is hard for us to control. Now we get in there and try to fix it. But that's why the pay for results model is tough sometimes.
Yeah, you know, in my businesses, I'm always thinking about stickability. Like you said, the rest of your life. What can we do that people have to stay with us?
Yep.
Because we're good at what we do. And I know you know you're good at what you do. But, like, what can we design that makes them stick?
Yeah.
And not resentfully, right? Like, they get excited to pay us.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, our model is something I call the customer success track. A lot of agencies come in and it's like, oh, we're going to do this and we're going to just do it every month. Same package, you know, phone it in, set it and forget it. You know, our approach is we want to take somebody from where they are to where they want to go. And that's going to involve maturing their marketing, growing with them, evolving with them, maybe even helping them to develop new products and services and offerings. And that's how we really view it is we're not just there to fix what's broken today. Yes, we're going to do that. But we really want to take you where we think is possible or where you really want to go with your business. And that's why, I mean, our clients stay with us for years. And I think that has a lot to do with it is that our point of view is you know, we're going to take you where you want to go.
Yeah, man. And the other thing is that it's an ever evolving industry, marketing, right? And now we have AI. Yeah. What do you do to stay up on, you know, the trends and the new things?
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously you've been in it a while, so I'm sure the internet marketing, digital marketing has come along, and now AI. Like, how are you staying you know, ahead of the game?
Yeah. So I mentioned that one of, you know, your question, what are you made of? You know, one of the attributes that I point to quite often is curiosity. You know, I started my business 30 years ago. We didn't have the internet. There was no such thing as a website. So imagine, you know, all the technology and all the advances that have come along in the last, you know, 30 years. I feel like curiosity has allowed my curiosity. I love this stuff. I love the new stuff. I love not just love it for love's sake. I love to find the practical applications and uses for it. And I think a lot of our clients really, and people that just follow anything I talk about, realize I'm going to cut through the BS. You know, AI is great, but it's not magic fairy dust. You know, there are some great, you know, practical applications for things that obviously involve AI, and they know that I'm going to give them that, and I'm going to bring them that. And I just think that curiosity and that point of view of, you know, let's not get excited about something because of the hype. Let's get excited about it because of the results it can produce in a practical way for our clients. And I think people, that point of view has served me very well. It doesn't really matter what the new technology is today, quite frankly. What marketers are here to do has fundamentally not changed, you know, since caveman days. But I think that, you know, if you take that point of view, we're here to build trust enough that somebody is going to want to, you know, exchange money for what it is that we're offering. The tools, the platforms, you know, there'll be new ones next week.
Yeah. 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 And one of the philosophies that we've taken on in our business is that we do things and find out what works for us. And then we create a business, a product or service offering from that. Too many people are out there marketing, Instagram, social media, all this, right? And they're not even doing it in their own business, what they're talking about. And I have a problem with that, because there's people that are putting their hard earned money into these things because they seem exciting. They're really good at hyping it up. But then does it actually work? And when you're working with that consultant or that CMO or whatever, is it actually going to take effect? And, you know, I have a problem with that, you know? And so one of my, you know, principles is to make sure that it works for us first. Is that kind of how you approach it?
100%. As I said, we license our methodology to other, you know, consultants and agencies. We also have an agency, and I, you know, half kiddingly talk about it as our laboratory. I mean, we basically, if we weren't doing it, if we weren't running an agency alongside of this, you know, how could we actually teach other people how to build their agency? And so we've stayed committed to that and work with clients, and everything that we do that works or that we learn, we then bring to the folks that we train.
Yeah. And John, where's the line between, because we talked about this in the green room about, you know, you have a podcast booking service you're part of, and that's what we do and all that. Where's the line between competition and collaboration with people in the same industry?
You know, I've always felt like there's so much to go around. I mean, I can't even scratch the surface, you know, of what's out there, you know, in the need. And if, you know, I'm a very much a 1+1=3, you know, all day long.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done it both ways. When I first started in the mortgage industry, I hated the other mortgage people. Or when I was a realtor, I was like, oh, these other realtors, this and that. And I never really thrived with that mindset. So once I switched to look collaboration, we've made so much more money and impact by shifting that focus. So John, listen, I want to know more about you and your upbringing and where you came from. Everybody's got a story. What's your story, John?
You know, my story probably, I mean, the biggest element of my story that, you know, I would say led me to where I am today is I grew up in a family with 9 siblings. And, you know, it was a nut house, but, you know, I learned so many lessons from watching my parents navigate that I know today, you know, served me extremely well.
Yeah, you know, that's a microcosm of the world. Like when you have a big family, it's like there's so many different personalities and experiences and things that happen. And, you know, you get to learn a lot of lessons in that. I just thought about that. I haven't thought about this in a while, but I'm the oldest of 8 kids.
Yeah,
so I forgot all about that until you just said that. I don't even know why haven't thought about that for a while, but I think as we get older, you get out of that family size, cause you're not in the day to day of it. But where were you in the nine kids?
So there's six older than me and three younger. And there's eight boys and two girls, which, you know, that's another dynamic, I suppose.
Yeah. And your parents with nine kids, what did your parents do?
Yeah. So my dad was an entrepreneur. He didn't call it that, but he was an independent sales rep, you know, for a couple manufacturers. So he did his own thing. He traveled all over the Midwest, you know, selling back when people did that, you know, go store to store, town to town. My mom, you know, she raised kids, but, you know, my dad, what I would say, a couple lessons that really always came out of that, just watching how they got by. You know, we didn't have a lot of money, you know, go buy $1,000 worth of groceries, you know, for the week. You know, so just watching kind of how they got by and how they valued, you know, each other's roles. And, you know, my dad was ex-military and, you know, it was basically everything for the Corps, you know, the esprit de corps, you know, was like, okay, we got to do X, you know, we're doing it as a team. I mean, there's just so many life lessons in that.
Yeah. And, you know, like obviously moms have it tough, wives have it tough, but we're going to talk about the men for a second because we're men. And I don't think a lot of people appreciate and understand what men go through, when, especially when they have a family. I only have two kids, but coming from a big family and really understanding what a father wakes up to and sometimes how hard it is to sleep with the responsibility on our shoulders, whether it's real or not, as far as being the provider.
Yeah.
And did you see your dad ever stress out or feel like he was the weight of the world on his shoulders with all those kids?
Yeah, I saw it all the time, quite frankly. And part of it was maybe a little more his personality, quite frankly, anyway. What was funny was my mom was just the opposite. It was always like, it's going to work out. It's going to be fine. You know, we'll just do this now, or, you know, this broke, so we were supposed to go this way now, you know, I mean, so I think they were a pretty decent balance, but the short answer to your question is yes, I saw my dad feel that pressure a lot.
Yeah. And as far as your business career, did you start in corporate America first, or did you start right into entrepreneurship? You know,
barely. I went to work for a large organization for about 5 years, and I just said, I got to do my own thing. And then I've been making it up ever since.
And what was that thing that you got into, your first
an ad agency journey? Actually, yeah, large ad agency, national agency. So, you know, I guess that's where I at least learned a little bit about how this business worked. But I just knew I wanted to do my own thing.
And back when you started, what was it that you were doing? Was it print, direct mail?
Yeah,
like, what did you guys focus on?
Like I said, I was doing just about anything. I mean, I, you know, at that age, you know, I had a lot of friends, you know, that got out of college like I did. They were working for corporations, so, you know, they'd throw me a project here or there or something. And we did a lot of print. We did full-on marketing campaigns, radio, outdoor billboards. Frankly, we still do some of that for some clients, even though, you know, obviously all the digital stuff and digital channels have become significant as well.
Yeah. What do you think is, besides the technology, right? What do you think as far as messaging goes and the psychology of it all? Has any of that changed?
Well, I think what I tell people all the time, I think the thing that's changed the most since I've been doing this, yeah, you got all the new platforms and technology. The thing that's changed the most is how people get to buy now. I mean, it is a lot more in their control, and they, you know, people do research and they make decisions about who they like and trust based on, you know, what other people are saying about them, you know, as opposed to when I started this, you had a good radio ad or good TV ad and, you know, you'd call them up and say, send the salesman out and they'll tell me what the price is. You know, now we do all of that ourselves now. And a lot of times we've already made a decision before a company even knows we have an interest. And so I think that's the dynamic that we need to actually be paying attention to.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, there's different types. I've been in sales since 1998. And back in the day, we would do everything up front to get to the people's house. Like I started in-home sales with water treatment.
Yep.
And we would offer a free water test to come into people's houses. And so they didn't know that they were going to be sold something. Well, they probably had an idea, but we didn't approach it that way. Now, I didn't make this up and I didn't feel comfortable with it, honestly, but we would come out, test the water. I was in my early 20s And then we would show them if they had great water, we would tell them. If they had problems, then we would show them the solution to the problem while we were in their house and spend 2 hours, 3 hours with them, and then expect to get a sale from them while we were there.
Yeah.
In that 2 or 3 hours for $5,000 to $7,000 purchase. And we held the price until the very end. I was trained not to tell the price until I was finished the demo. Nowadays, price, you know, you tell them up front and then you build value throughout the demonstration to justify the price. I think that's the best way to do it now.
They already know the price because, you know, they can find it.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, because of all the information out there, right? Were you in that before, though, where you were doing the demo or doing everything and then holding the price, and then bang?
Yeah, I mean, you know, to some degree, I wouldn't say we still do that today, but there is a psychology between, you know, if somebody just says, how much is it? It's $10,000. Well, I don't know $10,000 worth of value yet. How can I make any assessment? So there is still some psychology around, you know, sharing the price based on, you know, how that result is going to work for you, because I can build a case for that. So there is still some of that, particularly in high ticket, you know, consultative, you know, type of environments, selling, you know, professional services. There's still a case to be made for, somebody can't make a decision about, you know, the value of a price, you know, until they understand, you know, what they're going to get, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, how about building a team? When you're building a company, you could be a marketing expert, but not know how to build culture, build team. What was that journey like for you as you started hiring employees and building team? Yeah. And did you go through mentorship with that, read a lot of books? Like, how did you evolve into a great business owner?
Yeah. Well, there's no question. It's one of the biggest stumbling blocks for most people. You know, in my case, I didn't have a mentor. I didn't go through leadership training at a corporation where I'd learn how to manage teams and things. So, you know, frankly, it's kind of odd, but I'm more of an introvert in some ways, in that I love working by myself, working, you know, I'll bury my head and work on some technology for hours, you know, and really enjoy that. So it's actually been harder for me to learn. I don't think, again, I made a lot of mistakes in it, you know, just making it up. I will tell you the best thing is get somebody, you know, on your team, you know, who actually is great at that, that understands team leadership, that really understands and it's not that I don't value culture, but, you know, culture, especially in today's world where a lot of teams are distributed all over the world, it's just a very intentional act that you have to, you know, stay consistent and build on and do. You know, I feel like my job, you know, by finding that person, that second in command, whatever you want to call it, you know, my job's to create and communicate the vision, and that person's really, you know, executing. So that's, you know, taking the cop out there, but I'm saying, you know, get that's such an important element that if that's not your strength, you know, get somebody that's their strength, because it is going to make all the difference in the world in terms of you growing your business.
And do you feel like you figured that out now, or do you feel like you're still working on that? And
I'm sure I'll always be working on that, but I have an amazing second person that has done, you know, over especially the last 4 or 5 years, has done an amazing job with, you know, the building of our organization. Side note, happens to be one of my daughters.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, my son works for us. He's 17, so I'm breaking him in as we go. But you know, the other thing is that, you know, AI, right? Let's talk about AI for a second. And you know, in my studies to stay up on AI and stay ahead of the curve with it, you know, I'm hearing a lot that eventually AI is going to, for the consumer, it's going to help make them the decision and tell them what they need, so they don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
Right. And would that be in the case? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, but also how's that going to affect marketing and marketing consultants?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of unknown and there's a lot of change, rapid change, you know, so take this with a grain of salt, because tomorrow it may be all different. I think that we're in that period right now where there are good practical uses for marketers for AI, but it's not the answer. It actually, you know, it will never provide context. I don't think it'll ever be able to replace a true human when it comes to thinking strategically. It can do tasks. It can do research, you know, like crazy. I mean, that's where we are today. And so there are amazing efficiencies that we are gaining by using some of these tools, but using them alongside our big brains and our strategic thinking. To me, that's where we are today. I think there may be a period of time where, this whole buying journey will continue to evolve. And, maybe there will be a place where a lot of the traditional marketing tactics today, like search and paid ads and social media and those kind of things will go away. But I don't think that, the authentic relationship, with a company or with a brand or with the person that works at that brand, is ever going to go away completely.
I agree with you. There's a new platform I just played around with this past weekend where I entered all my sales copy, all my landing page copy, all the stuff into this platform. And then it's structured to create posts based on my personality, the company's personality, and all of the information. And I was absolutely blown away with the strategy that it came up with, the copy, the overcoming objections, how to offer things. I was actually blown away by it. But I do think in business, there's transactional, which I'm not a fan of. And I don't think anybody should be a fan of, but most companies are transactional. And then there's the transformative. And that transformative is what we aim for. And I don't know how AI is going to help you become a transformative company.
Yeah.
Now, not just with your clients, but also with your employees and the connection and the vibe with everybody in the organization. Do you agree with that?
No question. I agree 100%. And I think that's actually going to be, a lot of people are like, oh, are they going to need, strategists anymore? And I was like, yeah, more than ever, because I think that's actually going to be the differentiator today. You talked about putting all that content into an AI tool. The reason that was able to produce awesome stuff is because you gave it awesome stuff, to work with. I mean, you gave it your voice and your style and, your point of view and your content. And so it's great at actually taking that and going, okay, I get it. I get what's next. Whereas a lot of people are looking at these tools and just saying, here's a couple of keywords, produce great content for me. And it's just never going to produce that in a way that's going to be valuable.
Yeah. I kind of look at it like, when you're a good business owner and manager and leader, you're able to tell your employees, you bring somebody in and then you're able to delegate properly to them and communicate effectively what you want. And I look at AI as the same way, but it's just faster.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an assistant right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, John, as far as podcasting goes, I'd love to hear, since you started podcasting well before me, 2005, you mentioned. What is podcasting, being a guest on shows and then maybe, having your own show, what has that done for you personally and professionally?
Well, so many things. I mean, I often tell people that if I we do have a substantial audience, and I'm thankful for that substantial audience. But I tell people all the time, if only one person was listening, I would still do it because I get to have great conversations like this that with people that want to be on my show that, maybe just having a 20-minute conversation with, they wouldn't make the time for. But the fact that we can have, this conversation on my show, I mean, I've made so many connections, especially early on in my career. Nobody had heard of me. I hadn't produced any books or anything yet. I had people that I really admired that were out there doing the things I wanted to do that would now have a 25, 30-minute conversation with me because I was going to promote something of theirs. And so, that value, has been immense. We do get, we do get leads and substantial revenue stream from the podcast and all those things, but I would do it, for no other reason than the connections I've made.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree, man. It's been so powerful and I wish I would have known it earlier. I really had no, 5 years ago, John, I didn't even know what a podcast was and somebody invited me on a show. And while I was being interviewed, my confidence level went through the roof. I was really hyper aware of it. And I was like, wow, if I can bottle this confidence, it's on. So I leaned in and started doing 7 to 10 shows a week. Matter of fact, this is my 10th podcast of the week and I still have Friday to go. And, because it's a content producer. There's so much, And some of my best friends now are people I've met through podcasting and, it's a community actually, and I know community's probably been a big part of what you've done. And have you seen that in the podcast world and the marketing world at that you start to establish a community, not even your own community. You don't even, it's already an established community.
Yeah. Yeah, no question about it. And in fact, you know, we do a lot of these in video like we're doing today as well. But, you know, originally it was all audio. And so a lot of times I wouldn't even see your face. And I remember, you know, time and time again, I'd go to a conference or something and I'd start talking. Somebody was like, oh, I know who you are. You know, it's like that instant connection because they recognize my voice.
Yeah, I agree. I grew up listening to Howard Stern and Larry King on when he was on, even before CNN. And I'd always admired those guys. And by the way, the sports talk networks and listening to voices, and then always, this is before the internet, we couldn't get to see what they look like. And we always had this, we always visualized what they look like. And then now we get to see people. So it's cool. But so John, what are you working on right now that's got you excited and that we could tell the audience about?
Well, so it's interesting. You know, I've been doing this same thing, licensing our technology, or our methodology, doing strategy first before tactics. I mean, I've been saying that forever. The last 4 or 5 years, we've actually positioned what we are training people to do, to really help call themselves fractional CMOs. It's the same thing we've been doing for 20 years, but we've really leaned into that positioning, and it's really made our licensing program take off, because I think that, increasingly the small to mid-sized business is realizing I need to buy strategy. I need to invest in strategy before I just, you know, buy the tactic of the week that all these people are selling. So, you know, I feel like we're really kind of making a new mark on the agency world by helping them shift into being much more strategic. And, you know, the selling of tactics is just a race to the bottom today. And so I think it's the leading edge, you know, is certainly going to be those folks that embrace strategy and selling strategy.
Yeah. And from here, what's the vision? Like, what do you see happening? What are you going towards now?
Well, we're helping people that maybe were just selling their time, you know, now build 7 and 8 figure businesses, because we're showing them how to take this model that is a very lucrative model and actually scale it using a repeatable process.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Repeatable processes, man. So much simpler when you wake up in the morning and have an idea what you're going to do. I've been through both. I've been where so much uncertainty, and it's just, man, it takes a toll on you personally, your family. Everything. And, but when you have that repeatable process, it's like a breath of fresh air, man. I can't stress that enough. Where can people find you? Or no, go ahead. Comment on that. And I want to know where to send people.
I was just going to say, the other thing is, a lot of times people go, oh, I don't want to do cookie cutter. Well, what happens with a repeatable process is you get better at it. You learn what works and doesn't work. And so you actually deliver far more value by using a repeatable process, because you get better at delivering it. And you also get faster, and it's more profitable, and all those good things.
Not to mention, when you add team, people have something to be set up for success in your company versus failure, which I've done it both ways again, because I didn't know any better back in the day.
Yeah.
And now it's like, you come to work with me, you're going to be set up for success, and it's going to be up to you to make it. Right. Yeah. Okay. So John, where can we send people?
Sure. Everything I've been doing for the last couple decades, you can find at ducttapemarketing.com, and that's DUCTTAPE marketing.com. Got, you know, if you're a business owner, we've got resources for you there. If you're an agency or a consultant, find out about our fractional CMO plus system there.
Awesome. Love it. John Jantz, thank you for being here, man.
Oh, my pleasure. It was a great conversation.
All right. Hang tight while I wrap this up. Listener, I appreciate you so much. Thank you for being here, listening, always participating and contributing with your engagement. Make sure you subscribe and like and share with your coworkers, your family, your friends, anybody you can think that could benefit from being reminded on a daily basis that they're unstoppable to living in the life of their dreams. This is your boy C-Rock with my guest, John Jantz, signing off from That One Studio on the What Are You Made Of Show. Until next time, be that one.
Music licensing reimagined.